the United States government.
This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. Calls for aid to Palestinians in Gaza have recently taken shape as a convoy of ships left a port in Cyprus, carrying about 400 tons of food and other relief supplies. VOA's Arash Arabasadi reports.
World Central Kitchen says the crafts carried ready-to-eat staples like rice, pasta, flour, canned vegetables, and proteins, enough to prepare more than 1 million meals. The United Nations warns that famine could strike northern Gaza as early as this month. The United States military, along with regional partners, continues delivering relief in the form of airdropped pallets filled with food and water. But the deliveries can be spotty at times without any organized distribution method on land. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
Pope Francis called for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza and the release of all Israeli hostages in Easter Sunday, address that marked the most important day on the Christian calendar by deploring the suffering caused by wars. He presided over Mass in a packed and flower bedecked St. Peter's Square, and then delivered his blessing and message from the central balcony. The Pope's Easter message traditionally focuses on world affairs, and he mentioned other flashpoints, including Ukraine, Syria, Lebanon, Armenia, and Azerbaijan, Haiti, Myanmar, Sudan, the Sahel and Horn of Africa regions, Congo, and Mozambique. The U.S. military said Sunday its forces destroyed one unmanned aerial vehicle in a Houthi rebel-held area of war-ravaged Yemen and another over a crucial shipping route in the Red Sea. It was the latest development in months of tensions between the Iran-backed rebels and the U.S. The drones, which were destroyed Saturday morning, posed a threat to U.S. and coalition forces and merchant vessels in the region, according to U.S. Central Command. This is VOA News. A Russian cruise missile strike on infrastructure in Ukraine's western Lviv region left one person dead while another died in an attack in the northeast. The Lviv regional governor says the attack Sunday destroyed a building and sparked a fire. In the Kharkiv region, an air attack killed a 19-year-old man after a missile hit a gas station. Thousands were left without power in the Odessa region. In Russia, meanwhile, the Ministry of Defense said that 10 Czech-made Vampire rockets landed in the border region of Belgorod, injuring a woman. Russian President Vladimir Putin has signed orders heralding the start of the country's annual spring recruitment season, officially drafting 150,000 conscripts. According to its defense minister, France is set to deliver hundreds of armored vehicles to Ukraine.
In an interview with a French newspaper, Sébastien Lecornu said Ukraine's army needs armored personnel carriers for troop mobility and to hold an extensive front line. France will be sending Ukraine its old VAB armored personnel carriers that started being used in 1979, as they plan to replace them with a new generation of armored vehicles. Lecornu adds France will also provide Ukraine with more anti-aircraft missiles. The move comes as France's government is pushing its military industry to boost its production to meet Kyiv's urgent needs for ammunition. I'm Lawrence Brooks.
Turkey's main opposition party has retained its control over key cities and made huge gains in local elections.
Preliminary results reported by state media Sunday showed the opposition mayors of Istanbul and Ankara retaining their seats. Their party was leading in 36 provinces. The vote was seen as a barometer of Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan's popularity as he sought to win back control of key urban areas he lost to the opposition 5 years ago amid a deep economic downturn and high inflation. The strong showing is likely to help invigorate the opposition after a scathing defeat in last year's presidential and parliamentary elections. Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Crews continue the complicated and meticulous operation of removing the steel and concrete from the fallen Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore, Maryland. The cranes periodically swung into place on Easter Sunday, and workers measured and cut the steel to prepare to lift sections of twisted steel. Church services and mass were held across the area. One reverend at Sacred Heart of Jesus urged building bridges in the community and better treatment of migrant workers. Includes the six construction crew workers who were filling potholes and were presumed dead after the collapse. Two of the crew survived. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butting, Washington. Today is Monday, April 1st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Guinea's military junta asked for an extension of the transition to civilian rule.
We know what it will take for the country to go back to the civilian rule. If we want our country to have strong institutions, we need to work it out.
The Eswatini government denies it has been harassing the widow of slain human rights lawyer Dulani Maseko. We also hear from the opposition. Somalia's semi-autonomous region of Puntland rejects a constitutional amendment passed by the federal government.
The fact that Puntland and other reputed politicians in Somalia are objecting to the constitutional reform process is another reason why the process is not to be rushed.
And Pope Francis calls for an immediate ceasefire in the conflict between Israel and Hamas in Gaza. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. It appears Guinea's military junta is reneging on its promise to return the country to democratic rule at the end of 2024. Prime Minister Mamadou Ouri Ba, appointed last month, has told the nation that the return to civilian rule will now begin in 2025. He cited the need for more time to hold a national census and prepare an electoral list. Fayyami Limono is the leader of the opposition Liberal Bloc Party. He says the national reception is divided between those who support the extension and those who are against. He tells me he supports the delay because Guineans need more time to build strong institutions before holding an election.
You have two positions expressed so far. There is a position that is opposed to that request, and it is the position holds mainly by those who haven't participated in the dialogue. Many of those who have participated in the dialogue, they don't have any problem accepting that expansion. But here is the situation, though. As we speak, we haven't seen the project of the new constitution. And as you know, one of the major elements in the agenda of the junta is to provide Guinea with the new constitution. We are still waiting for the first draft of that new constitution. The second thing is, as we speak, we don't have voters registry for those elections. We have said we're going to get it from the census that is going to be done, and that census is scheduled to happen this year of 2024.
Where does your party stand to the request made for the extension? Are you one of the groups that agree to extend, or are you opposed?
My political party is among those who accept the extension. One of the reasons is, you remember when we were talking about the length of that transitional period, we had proposed 3 years for this transition to end. That was 36 months. And we had almost gotten the consensus on that when the ECOWAS leaders come to talk about 24 months. We know what it will take for the agenda to be implemented, for the country to go back to the civilian rule. And people have to remember one thing. That is the way we rushed to elections in 2008, 2009, and here we are today. If we want our country to have strong institutions, we need to work it out. It's not to all the time we have a transition, we rush to elections, have a president. Every time you're going to have those kind of presidents, the only interest they will have is how to be reelected after the first term, how to change the constitution to have a third term, how to change again the constitution to have a fourth term. If we want all of that to be behind us, we need to give ourselves time and work things out and build strong institutions.
The end of the timetable is this December. Is that correct?
It is next December, according to what the ECOWAS and the junta had signed as ECOWAS.
So therefore, ECOWAS will need to respond to this request.
So I will need to respond. But from my view is what Guineans think first, because we are not against the position expressed by ECOWAS, but Guineans are the ones living those problems.
Faye Milimuno is the leader of the Liberal Bloc Party of Guinea. He was speaking with us from the Guinean capital, Conakry. Somalia's semi-autonomous region of Puntland has criticized a constitutional amendment made by the federal government and announced withdrawing recognition for the federal government institutions. In a statement issued late Saturday, Puntland said it no longer recognizes federal government institutions until there is a complete constitutional system in which Somalis agree, and Puntland is part of it. Ahmed Issa Awad is a former Puntland foreign minister and now a presidential candidate. He tells VOA's Harun Marouf that both the federal government and Puntland have made what he calls rush decisions.
My reaction is that this was unnecessary. It didn't go through the normal process of constitutional reform in democratic society. Somalia has suffered and the Somali state has collapsed due to absence of institutional framework and political culture of a strong man. And it seems that this constitution entrenches that political culture that has already caused the collapse of the Somali state.
But the president says it's his responsibility. One of the reasons he was elected was to complete the constitution, and completing the constitution has been dragging on for years and years now. Why is it the wrong time to conduct and conclude that work on constitution?
The president, he said that, is woefully misunderstanding the constitution. He is not elected to complete the constitution. He is elected to uphold the existing constitution first. And if a constitution has to be amended, reformed or completed, it has to go through the democratic process.
Well, now a number of high-profile politicians, former presidents, opposition figures, and the regional state of Puntland have come against and criticized the process. In particular, Puntland said it's going to run its own affairs as an independent state with full powers. What does that mean?
It doesn't mean anything. It means the same old political culture of putting premier on the wishes of the president, whether that president is at the federal level or at the regional level, in this case at the Puntland level. So the fact that Puntland and other reputed politicians in Somalia are objecting to the constitutional reform process is another reason why the process is not to be rushed. But Puntland itself should also be mindful that they should respect the federal constitution. Puntland is part of the federal government. The constitution of Puntland cannot contradict the federal constitution. And Puntland people and the founders intended that Puntland stays an integral part of the federal government of Somalia and contributes to the state building of Somalia, not to become an impediment because the federal government is messing with the constitution, and therefore Puntland has also reacted equally without constitutionality.
So you don't think Puntland will secede from Somalia? Why?
Because the constitution of Puntland and the people of Puntland do not give any government in Puntland to seceding from Somalia. Puntland is committed to being part of the Somali Republic, Somali federal government, and to contribute to state building in Somalia.
Ahmed Issa Awad is a former Puntland foreign minister and now a presidential candidate. He was speaking with reporter Harun Marouf of the U.S. Somali Language Service. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butting, Washington. Today is Monday, April 1st. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. The spokesperson for the Eswatini government is denying that the government has been harassing the widow of slain human rights lawyer Tulani Maseko. Maseko, the chair of the Multi-Stakeholders Forum, was killed in his home in January last year. His widow, Tanele, has accused the government of being behind the assassination of her husband. Eswatini government spokesperson Alfia Zumalo tells me he only told the widow to prove her allegations that the government was responsible for the death of her husband.
In fact, specifically, the threatening aspect of what is being perpetrated was directed to me personally as government spokesperson. However, there is no reason to threaten the widow of Babe Tulani Maseko or anybody else in the country. All that I do at that particular time, and I did, was to bring it to the attention of Mage Tenele Maseko, that to allege that the head of state, or somebody else for that matter, have had a hand in the murder and assassination of your husband or anybody else for that matter. You will have to prove that, because he or she who alleges must prove what she or he is alleging. That is not a threat. That is the reality of law.
So is she free to move around Eswatini or to leave Eswatini if she wants to?
Very much so. Even as the police invited her to come and assist with certain aspect of information which they needed to in order to accelerate the investigations to the matter of her husband. He was arriving into the country from the Republic of South Africa. She is free to move anywhere and everywhere. Even the interview that was conducted with her, it is continuing next week, Tuesday. She is a free woman to do what she wants to do. She is a free woman to travel to wherever she chooses to travel. The police only needed her for what they're interviewing her about, and that's what settles the matter. There is absolutely no restrictions imposed on her.
The last time you and I, we spoke, I think you had said that your government had launched an investigation into the killing of Maseko. What is the status of that investigation?
What the police are currently doing with Mage Maseko is actually part and parcel of that accelerated investigations, because we are aware that certain pockets of the international community, regional community, is actually interested to know and to find out as quickly as it can possibly be as to what really happened in the murder of Mr. Tulani Maseko. Mage Maseko, unfortunately, since the demise of Babe Maseko, have not been cooperative with the law enforcement agencies. I don't know as to what the reasons that could be attributed to. However, this is what the police are doing. They're investigating the matter since they started investigation from that time, and she has been asked to come forward and assist the police on a number of occasions, and she has been reluctant, especially when it comes to the aspect of handing the phone of Babe Maseko to the police.
Alfia Zumalo is the Eswatini government spokesperson. He was speaking with us from the capital, Mbabane. A spokesperson for the Eswatini Multi-Stakeholders Forum says the Eswatini government is harassing Tanele Maseko, the widow of slain human rights lawyer Tulani Maseko. Multi-stakeholder spokesperson Sivu Meluano Nyambe tells me there is no justification for the police to ask Mrs. Maseko for her cell phone just because she has demanded progress in the investigation of her husband's assassination.
In our view, the government is harassing Mrs. Maseko, because this incident of the assassination of Tulani Maseko happened a year ago, and we know for a fact that Mrs. Maseko did make a statement to the police a day after the assassination. A year later, the government now is requesting the phone that Mrs. Maseko is using, a phone that has been active for a whole year. What type of evidence they are going to get from a phone that has been active for a year? We think this is harassment in its highest order.
The government spokesperson said that the government isn't harassing her. They just wanted for her to provide proof about a comment that they said she made accusing the government of being responsible for the assassination of her husband.
Well, in Swaziland, when a crime has taken place and you report it to the police, the first question they ask you, who do you suspect? And there is nothing wrong. It is normal practice that you name whoever you think is a suspect. It is the job of the police then to prove if that person or that entity is a suspect. So I don't think she went did anything that is out of ordinary.
So don't you think the police have the right, therefore, to, in their investigation, to ask for her cell phone?
Well, I really don't see why the cell phone is helping the police, because those statements were made in the social media, were well broadcasted, and they know where statements were made, and they have access to those statements. And if she was making the statement, she was not also taking a picture of herself or recording herself at that thing. So I don't understand the logic of the police in this case.
Sivu Meluano Nyembe is the spokesperson for the Eswatini Multi-Stakeholders Forum. He was speaking with us from the Eswatini capital, Mbabane. Pope Francis called for an immediate ceasefire in the conflict between Israel and Hamas in Gaza. This, as Christians around the world celebrated Easter on Sunday and relief teams struggled to deliver aid to besieged Palestinian territories. VOA's Araj Arabasadi has more.
Easter Sunday in Vatican City. Before a packed crowd at St. Peter's Square filled with flowers, Pope Francis delivered a message calling for peace in Gaza.
I appeal once again that access to humanitarian aid be ensured in Gaza, and call once more for the prompt release of the hostages seized on October 7th, and for an immediate ceasefire in the Strip. Let us not allow the current hostilities to continue to have grave repercussions on the civil population, and above all, the children.
Calls for aid to Gaza have recently taken shape as a convoy of ships left a port in Cyprus Saturday carrying some 400 tons of food and other relief supplies. World Central Kitchen says the crafts carried ready-to-eat staples like rice, pasta, flour, canned vegetables, and proteins, enough to prepare more than 1 million meals. The United Nations warns that famine could strike northern Gaza as early as this month. The United States military, along with regional partners, continues delivering relief in the form of airdropped pallets filled with food and water. But the deliveries can be spotty at times without any organized distribution method on land. Israel declared war on Hamas following an October 7th surprise attack by the militant group in which it killed 1,200 and kidnapped more than 250. Israel has since placed a stranglehold on the entire region, pummeling civilian infrastructure and restricting the flow of aid. Health officials in Gaza say more than 32,000 Palestinians have been killed. The United Nations International Court of Justice issued two provisional measures in a case brought by South Africa accusing Israel of genocide, a charge Israel flatly denies. But for many Israelis, an ongoing war isn't the answer, as they took to the streets demanding their government sign a ceasefire agreement with Hamas in exchange for hostages still held by the group Western powers identify as a terror organization. On Sunday, at the Church of the Holy Sepulchre in Jerusalem, widely considered the most holy site in Christianity, the Archbishop held Easter Mass in a church emptier than years past, as since October 7th, Palestinian worshippers need special permission to cross checkpoints into Jerusalem. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too. James, we begin the sport with results of matches played in the first leg of the CAF Confederations Cup quarterfinals played on Sunday. Former CAF Confederations Cup champions Zamalek SC of Egypt came from behind to snatch a late 2-1 victory over Future FC in the quarterfinals of the first leg of their CAF Confederations Cup quarterfinal clash competition played at the Al Salam Stadium on Sunday evening. Ghanaian side Dreams FC clinched a remarkable 2-1 triumph over 10-man Stade Malien in Bamako, while Rivers United of Nigeria secured a crucial 1-0 victory over USM Alger of Algeria in Nigeria on Sunday. Staying with football news, striker Mohamed Salah scored the winner as Liverpool came back from a goal down to beat Brighton and Hove Albion 2-1 and go top of the Premier League. Salah's sublime second half strike leaves Liverpool on 67 points and on top of the table, 2 points clear of Arsenal and 3 ahead of Manchester City. The Egyptian striker tormented Brighton, taking 12 shots to notch up his highest total in the Premier League game, and even though only one of them found the back of the net, it was to prove vital. In motorsports, the World Rally Championship Safari Rally taking place in Kenya ended on Sunday. Finnish international Kale Rovanperä is the 2024 World Rally Championship Safari Rally champion after emerging victorious to clinch his second win in the Nakuru Bay's iconic event with a commanding lead of 1 minute and 37.8 seconds on Sunday in Naivasha, Kenya. The Finn did not pull the foot wrong, keeping away from the Safari Rally woes to dominate the event from Friday when he swept all the stages. He had dominating displays through to the final finish on Sunday. The 23-year-old won the event to register his 12th career victory.
This is definitely one of the toughest rallies, so it feels amazing to have so clean weekend. It's an important race for Toyota and the whole team, so to have again double podium with Taka is really nice.
In athletics, Kenya's Beatrice Chebet successfully defended her senior women's title at the World Athletics Cross-Country Championships on Saturday, becoming the first senior female athlete to win the title back-to-back since Tinirish Dibaba in 2006. World cross-country champion Beatrice Chebet led Kenyans to sweep 5 top positions in the women's 10-kilometer senior race at the World Cross-Country Championships in Belgrade, Serbia. The 24-year-old Chebet conquered an extremely strong field of her Kenyan compatriots when she broke away from Lilian Kaziet Regrekruk just 400 meters from the finish line to win in 31 minutes 05 seconds.
Today I thought it was because I managed to defend my title, and again the course was so good. The weather was good, and again the obstacles were not that much hard.
Jacob Kiplimo retained his senior men's title at the championship, joining an illustrious list of athletes to have successfully defended a world cross-country title. And that's it for this Monday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a great Monday. And that's it for this Monday, April 1st edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for beginning your week with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Martin, Washington, wishing that you will have a great week.
To the conversation on things that matter to hearts and minds of women. Here in Kinshasa, campaigns to raise awareness against the spread of coronavirus are common, but getting that information to people who have no access to water, electricity, or money can be a challenge.
With strong opinions and expertise on things that impact and change their lives.
I think a big thing for me is just being able to say that when these protests are happening, does it turn around into policy?
From right here in the nation's capital to on the ground from all over the African continent.
It was powerful because it showed what is possible when men and women band together and say, enough is enough.
We hear your voices, women's voices, our voices, and add your voice to the conversation. Each week, right here on The Voice of America.